Every single day, hundreds of television pilots are aired one time, recorded to VHS tape, and then uploaded to the internet, where they sit for decades, unwatched and unloved. Luckily, there is a podcast that cares. On Piloting Error, each episode, we rescue a forgotten pilot and give it more love than it has ever received. And for less than the price of a cup of coffee, you can help sponsor a poor, neglected, failed television pilot by listening and subscribing. Because if you don't, who will? Piloting Error, a Bridge Burner Collective podcast.
Welcome to Pumpkin Spice Podcast. My name's Rob, and I'm here to pod. And alongside me is my buddy holding his cat. Which cat is that, Graham?
Sunny Jim. A little Twin Peaks The Return reference.
Yes, yes.
Hi, Rob. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Under some unfortunate circumstances here, Graham, our bus has broken down.
I was going to say possibly the worst place to break down, but we're not going to talk crap on East Texas. So, yes.
Well, this area could potentially, like, if we were to break down at this hotel, that might be one of the worst places to break down.
Yeah, we mean that in the sense of the movie that we watched today.
Yes.
And what we watched has been called Eaten Alive. It's also known as the Starlight Slaughter, I believe.
Really? I didn't realize that.
And Rob, I'm interested to see your take on this because I think you can go one way or the other. I love the film. It's Tobe Hooper's film after Texas Chainsaw. I enjoy it. I mean, I think the Texas Chainsaw is a masterpiece, but I really enjoy this one.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Not get me wrong. But it is weird to look at compared to the Texas Chainsaw, which is why you never want to compare films, you know?
Yeah.
Because it is wildly different. But before we get into that, maybe I should just read the Letterboxd description for anyone who maybe hasn't seen it yet and just doesn't mind a spoilery-ish chat that we have. Eaten Alive, 1976. Meet the maniac and his friend, a psychotic redneck who owns a dilapidated hotel in the backwater swamps of Louisiana, kills various people who upset him or his business, and he feeds their bodies to a large crocodile that he keeps as a pet in the swamp beside his hotel. So this is filmed in East Texas, but takes place in Louisiana.
Well, it takes place in Louisiana. It was actually filmed in Los Angeles.
So then why are we broken down in East Texas? I'm so confused.
Well, I was positive that this film takes place. We're on the Texas-Louisiana border.
And it gets blurry.
Yeah.
It does get blurry in that area.
But sort of different to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, this was filmed all on a set, on a stage.
Yes. Yes.
And they have they're two very different looking films.
That was the first thing I wanted to bring up. This looks like it could have been a stage play.
Absolutely.
Like, wouldn't you love to go see the stage play of Eaten Alive?
It would be great if you could talk Robert Englund into playing the Neville Brand role.
Oh, yes.
And just, yes, you know, do like a Broadway tour, whatever. That could be fun.
Here's the thing. The movie cuts to different scenes, but you could totally like still play those out in the way that a movie or that a play would adapt that sort of thing. And also like the big reveal of the crocodile could like be giant set pieces, like once before intermission, once at the end. It would be great.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah. It's it's funny. And I think one of the reasons why my brain goes right to Texas with this film is that there's a lot of burnt orange in that first act. Yes. And I think that was Toby's way of sort of staying Texas in Los Angeles.
Here's the thing. The movie is strange in the sense that, like, you wonder why. Like, I guess you could ask that about, like, say, Texas Chainsaw Massacre or any film that's made. But, like, this one doesn't feel like it has as much. And I don't think I mean this in a bad way, per se, because it was still, like, an interesting watch. But is it just me, or does this film feel more like, let's write a monster croc movie rather than, like, let's tell a story?
Sure. I mean, can see that.
I don't know, something like, it feels like there's a piece of the soul missing from this. I love the way it looks. I think it's got a lot of great lines. I think it's got a lot of really fun parts to it, but you know, it doesn't feel like the puzzle's missing a couple of pieces.
It's a dream, you know, it's, I don't know if it's designed to be that way, but that's the way it came out. And I think it kind of adds, an extra flair to the film. For example, so our star Neville Brand does sort of a similar thing to our Texas Chainsaw characters, as that he commits like this horrible act of violence, goes to a separate room and just broods about it. And it's that Southern Texas, Louisiana crazy that Toby seems to understand. And honestly, those are the scariest parts of just the character Judd trying to internalize his actions.
Like, why he needs to do this. Like, he feels obviously so strong about, like, the women who work at the cat house or whatever. But he also feels bad about it, but we don't really know why. And it all, you know what it feels like to me? It feels like some sort of like war PTSD, because in the room that he broods, he's got like weapons on hanging from the wall and like American flags and stuff.
Well, he also has a Nazi flag.
Was it? It looked like it could have been, but it's like all burnt up. And
this is a perfect transition, Rob. Neville Brand, war hero, I wouldn't, you know, maybe that was something that he brought back from Europe. Unfortunately, I didn't do research in that specific area for our talk today, but I think that's what it's supposed to mean.
Like that he was a World War II vet, the character?
Possibly, yes.
Well, I think you could say, I mean, that's exactly what I'm trying to say, is like, that's the only thing that really feels like it makes sense in this movie, is that he's got some like undiagnosed issues that are causing him to like create war in his own life with his only friend, Killer Croc.
So Neville Brand is just a great, amazing actor. And real quickly, if you sort of want to get into the films, like right, like his film noir movies, Riot and Cell Block 11, Where the Sidewalk Ends, and Kansas City Confidential are great movies to get into Neville Brand. But for me, this performance is almost like he lets his own personal PTSD from the war sort of, he takes it off the leash, and he almost imagines himself as, you know, a Neville Brand that wasn't able to control. What am I trying to say? I don't know. That
like if the monster took over.
Yes, exactly.
It's well documented that like you go to some fairly gruesome wars, you don't really come back the same, or you need extreme treatment that sometimes it's not given to our veterans. And especially at this point in time, there's a lot of like, and it seems like he was a World War II vet, you know, buck up was a big, like,
get over it.
Yeah. Some other interesting cast members in this.
Yes.
Now, we'll see Robert Englund, Freddy Krueger, at the beginning of this with the line you hinted at in another episode, Graham. This is, what, didn't Tarantino just almost directly steal it? He says Rarin, but yeah.
It's funny because he even talks about that in Cinema Speculation.
Oh, yeah.
He mentions Eaten Alive and how he and the person who was dating his mother thought that was like the funniest line they'd ever heard in a movie. And like hours after the movie had ended, they were like giggling and saying that to each other. It's a great chapter in that book. And I would recommend that book if it's just as entertaining as anything he's ever directed.
I should put it on the list after Heat 2, which is...
That's also good.
That's what I hear. It is a great line, and it's worth being used in another film, but I do love the idea of some old fart, you know, being like, oh my God, this is the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. It's funny. Now, the opening shot to Eaten Alive is on his belt buckle, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That I always thought was iconic. Like it's good. One of Toby's most like interesting opening shots.
Very Toby to have a belt buckle as like an opening shot.
There you go. Sure.
Other cast members though, you've got Carolyn Jones who plays Miss Hattie, who runs the cat house of sorts, the men's club. But she played Morticia Addams on the TV show, The Addams Family, right? That's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I don't really know Mel Ferrer very much, but Marilyn Burns looks familiar.
Marilyn Burns should have won Best Supporting Actress for Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
She's the reason, she's a huge reason why that movie works. And I'm sure we've talked about this on the podcast before, but I will not stop until she's in the Texas Hall of Fame.
Did I ever tell you that my friend Mike Sachs, the writer, is working on like, he has the rights to essentially a film about the making of Texas Chainsaw Massacre? And they're trying to get it made. And I just cannot wait until this happens.
Yeah, that sounds amazing because as far as like the company that was responsible for distributing the movie happened to be the mafia. So there's other aspect to the film. Yeah, it's really interesting. As Joe Bob Briggs would say, how much did the movie make? Well, no one really knows because the mafia really isn't that great of keeping up their books.
I looked for an update and he says, the movie script I worked on with David Dubois is set to be cast soon. This is back in February. Director's on board. Super exciting. The making of 1974's Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Hoping to shoot later this year. So I'm guessing not this year, but probably soon. But my other favorite Texas Chainsaw Massacre tweet from Mike is, I've always loved the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, if only because Leatherface puts on a tie each morning before heading out the door to kill. You don't see that with younger serial killers. Old school. He respects his victims.
Yeah, that was back when you had to put a suit and tie on for work. And not only that, he changes his face 3 times in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. You got to keep it clean. Let's see here. Yeah, we talked about Robert Englund. Kyle Richards is in this movie, Real Housewife of Beverly Hills, plays Angie crawling around in those cobwebs the whole movie. Now, Angie has like a Forrest Gump brace on her leg throughout this movie, and Neville Brand's Judd character has a wooden leg, same leg. Sometimes Angie falls and Judd falls. That is one of those dream things as well, right? Like,
yeah,
there's always that sort of thing in dreams where something can't quite go right, and it seems like it starts a pattern when you're in like weird nightmares and I'm almost about to wake up scenarios. And I can really grasp that between those two and the chase sequence.
Yeah, you get trapped in a moment.
Yeah, yeah. A loop almost. Yes. And then, of course, the croc is real and still alive with us today. No. But yeah, Graham, I like this film. And I think it almost would make a better stage play.
It would. It'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Who would you get to? Who would be your person to star in the stage version of Eaten Alive? Wow.
As Judd?
Yeah.
Oh, let's see here. Only because it's recency bias, because I heard him do a talk the other day. Maybe Zachary Quinto.
Oh, okay.
He likes doing stage stuff. And I think we need to break him out of his, like, that's the just the like caliber of actor, I think, that could draw in crowds, but also be like, whoa, I saw Zachary Quinto in a stage performance of Eaten Alive. And I'd be like, what the fuck? And that's exactly what you want with this.
Exactly. One more quick person that's in the cast of the film version is William Finley. Did we talk about him? I can't.
I don't think we did.
Okay. So he's a Brian De Palma standard. And I can't remember if you've seen this or not, Rob, but if you haven't, Phantom of the Paradise is like your new favorite movie. Like, it is awesome.
He's also in Funhouse, right?
He's in Funhouse. He's in Dressed to Kill. He's in Obsession. He's in De Palma's Sisters. So he worked with De Palma a lot.
Wow. Yeah, I'll have to check all of those out for sure. Side note, Graham, I just watched a movie that Eaten Alive is kind of reminding me of, in the sense that, like, the first time you see it, you might kind of be like, but like by the second viewing, you're like, actually, I'm well on board with this film. And yeah. I kind of, that might be my favorite type of film. And that is 1992, I believe. Ring of Death. I think that's what it's called.
That kind of sounds familiar.
Not Ring of Death. Death Ring from 1993.
Death Ring.
Yes. Now, Death Ring is essentially a... Oh, it's 92. Death Ring 92. It is a ripoff of The Most Dangerous Game, right?
Okay.
And it stars Billy Drago.
Okay.
Don Swayze.
Oh my gosh. This Chad McQueen, amazing.
Mike Norris, Elizabeth Soong, a cameo from Branscombe Richmond.
I'm going to watch this tonight. I mean, you had me at Billy Drago.
Oh, yeah. And a Most Dangerous Game ripoff. But definitely, like, it is one of those films that you have to watch twice.
We got to stay on topic, but Rob, this is what I'm doing, not you. don't blame yourself, blame me. So when we were kids, do you remember that Most Dangerous Game movie? It's on the tip of my tongue, but it had Ice-T and Rutger Hauer, and they played it on TNT or TBS like all the freaking time. And Ice-T was a homeless man, and Rutger Hauer's like, hey, you want to come to this thing? And then they haunt him.
Is that Surviving the Game?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Oh, I think that you would love that. That's a really cool movie.
I vaguely remember this movie.
I just remember them playing it all. It was like every Thursday, Wednesday, Friday night, it was Surviving the Game on TNT or TBS or which one of those?
Yeah. Gary Busey. Yeah, I'm looking it up now. F. Murray Abraham. John Oscar C. McGinley. Winning. Yes. Oh, man. And it's Ice-T with like his movie haircut too.
Yeah.
And Gary Busey with like war paint and a lot of fringe.
Yeah. His after a certain time, like in Gary's life, all of the characters he was playing were pretty much himself. They were just like, okay, we can't keep a leash on this guy. We're just going to let him be himself.
Well, Graham, do you have any final thoughts on Eaten Alive that we haven't touched on yet?
I have two. Please. And it'll be very, very quick.
Be as long as you'd like.
I am known to be a little long-winded, so I don't want to do that. But Rob, do you remember in one of Neville Brand's brooding scenes, I can't remember when he does this, but it's right after he kills someone. He goes into his little study area and he sits down and he takes out some BC powder.
Yes.
And puts it out on his tongue. Yes. And then swallows it with a drink.
Yes.
That is the most Southern thing I have ever experienced since moving to the South. And a lot of people do that. It's meant to put it in your iced tea or whatever, but you're supposed to drink it with, or you're supposed to like take it with liquid. Uh-huh. But if you're a proper Southern gentleman, you put it in your mouth and then
put it in the palm of your hand and lick it off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I had never even heard of BC powder. Like, it's just not a, yeah, I guess I didn't grow up
until I moved to Austin.
Yeah. I was like, I guess I haven't been that South to know what BC powder is.
According to my brother, even more popular in Nashville.
Okay. Okay. I'll have to do some research. What was your other final thought?
Well, believe it or not, Judd is actually based on a real person.
I believe it.
So, you know, Texas Chainsaw was loosely based on aspects of Ed Gein's life. There was a feller by the name of Joe Ball.
Joe Ball.
And Joe was sometimes referred to as the Alligator Man. Not Crocodile Man, but Alligator Man.
Okay, okay.
And so he supposedly killed, I think they on the record know that he killed two people and possibly up to 20.
Wow.
And he, you know, would get, but you know, alligators can't eat a person whole. A crocodile can. But so crocodiles are in Africa. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But what's kind of a little creepy, I know this is a fun podcast, but I'll say something a little
weird. We're covering Eaten Alive.
Weird.
Yeah.
When the police went to confront him about these two missing women, he pulled out a gun and shot himself in the heart.
The heart?
Yeah. So most of the sources that I looked at say that he shot himself in the heart. There are a couple that say that he shot himself in the head, but I thought it was just interesting. The heart,
the head and the heart.
Yeah.
The heart is.
So we'll really never know.
No. Well,
the whole story, but
might have to dig him up, I guess.
But yeah. Ask him some questions.
From 1930.
But Toby, I think, you know, long before the internet,
You get these stories, right?
Weird Texas folklore or rural American folklore and how creepy it can really get.
Totally. Well, on that note, Graham, should we see where we're going? Wait, we know where we're going and we know where we've been. But maybe we'll be broken down another time and we'll get another bonus episode, huh?
I'm sure we will, because this van is on its last leg.
Well, so I guess we don't need to look at any tickets, but I will say, I told you about Death Ring. Well, at the time of this recording, it's because on my podcast, Bill and Rob's An Excellent Adventure, Bill has chosen a series of movies based on the theme sibling rivalry, where it's like brothers essentially of different more famous actors. So we've watched Terror in Beverly Hills.
Oh yes.
Driving Force.
Who's in that?
Don Swayze again. It's tow truck drivers in the future. Best of the Best. Eric Roberts, Chris Penn.
Gotcha.
Overkill. Aaron Norris. Which is kind of a Rambo-y type thing, except everyone continues to wear pleated pants.
Does Aaron Norris have a mustache?
He doesn't, but he's got 5 o'clock shadow.
Okay.
Yeah. Death Ring. And then we haven't watched these two yet, but we're getting ready to record them. Savage Harbor, which is Frank Stallone again, because Terror in Beverly Hills has Frank Stallone for about 5 minutes.
Yeah. That's a whole episode.
Yeah. We're capping it with Ice Cream Man. With a...
Ron Howard's brother.
Yes. Which, God, you'd be welcome to join us on with Clint Howard.
Clint Howard, yes. You know what? I would love to do that. I am not the biggest fan of Ice Cream Man, but maybe you guys can change my mind.
Well, we haven't seen it. It's just a brother, you know?
Gotcha. Well, or maybe you'll be like, you should have warned us.
Yes, exactly. And that's kind of what we've gotten into with all of these films. There should have been at least a little bit of a warning. But maybe you can inform us on some other siblings that should have been in movies, because it's been, you know, it's harder than you think. There's not that many famous siblings.
Who do you think is more famous? And I'm probably thinking like more from like our childhood. Randy Quaid? Or his brother, why am I terrible with names today? Randy Quaid and Dennis Quaid.
Ooh. Randy Quaid is probably more famous.
I think for us, because of the vacation movies and the fact that he's from Kansas and he represents us so well.
Although Dennis Quaid did have Frequency.
Dennis Quaid had Inner Space, which played on HBO all the time.
Yeah. And speaking of siblings, you and I haven't talked about this movie, but I think it might be on my next watch or my next series for Bill and Rob's is Star 80.
Yes.
We already got Eric Roberts on our one that we did with Best of the Best, but I finally finished Star 80.
Grant. And now you can say you've seen it.
Yeah. And it's great.
Yeah. And Peter Bogdanovich
Paul Schneider. Yeah.
Paul Schneider has to be one of the most despicable characters in a movie. And then you find out it's based on a real person.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh gosh, that sucks.
Yeah. And to think that like the godfather of jazz hands, Bob Fosse, wrote and directed that as his final film.
Yeah.
Okay. We don't have much time left, Graham, but I do want to know, why do you think Bob Fosse was attached to that film?
That's a really good question that I don't really have an answer for. I could only speculate. You know, I think that maybe he was moved by the story and, you know, this promising young actor.
Life Fosse's cut a short. Weirdo. He was a weirdo.
Fosse,
in the best, I say that in the best way possible.
Yes. I mean, Fosse got a little fussy on set. He was a perfectionist.
Really? Yes, he was.
And who knows if he intended Star 80 to be his final film. I believe he died of lung cancer. He smoked a lot of cigarettes.
But also he made that after he made All That Jazz, which was him already like coming to terms with the end of his life. So there's some sort of choice there. I don't know.
So All That Jazz, there's a party sequence at the beginning of the film that has some of the best editing I've ever seen in my life. And for anybody who wants to be a film editor out there, go watch All That Jazz and you'll know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. All That Hands. Anyway, Graham, this has been another great episode of Pumpkin Spice Podcast where we stayed on track through most of the movie. We're broken down, man. Where the heat's getting to us.
Oh my God, dude, you have no idea. It was like 104 today.
Oh, God. Yeah. It's, I mean, it's getting out there here in the desert, too. So, listeners, yeah. If you'd like to help us in this heat, make sure to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, and tell your friends, because this is fun and we want more people to suggest things. And hell, maybe we'll be covering your state soon.
Yeah, join us on the conversation. And if you have or know of a horror movie that we have neglected, well, by God, let us know.
Give it up. All right, dude. Well, I will talk to you soon, Graham.
All right, take it easy.
Bye-bye.